Ash, Court of Appeals, Division 1 is now set.
Thank you all. Please be seated. Good morning. As a first matter, I'm going to encourage everybody in the room to please silence your phones to avoid embarrassment or disruption. We are here for oral argument in our case number, tax case 24-0001, Ogston versus the Arizona Department of Revenue et al. As you know, we record and live stream these proceedings, so please introduce yourselves when you begin and your client. You each have a maximum of 20 minutes per side, although we do not require you to use all of that time. We leave that up to you. To the extent that you would like to preserve time for rebuttal, that is up to you. And good luck with that. Sometimes we have a lot of questions. Do keep in mind that we have read the briefing. We are familiar with the record below. We have conferenced the case this morning. And with that, Mr. Thorpe, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honors. John Thorpe at the Goldwater Institute for Appellant Richard Ogston. Also with me at council table is Jonathan Riches with the Goldwater Institute. And if possible, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, in the early 1980s, Arizona fundamentally changed how primary and secondary property taxes are assessed. With respect to hospital districts, the legislature made it crystal clear. Any tax must be approved by voters prior to imposition. Shortly before that, in 1980, the legislature added language that now appears in ARS 42-17201, establishing a strict primary property tax limit and stating that counties must obtain voter approval before levying taxes in excess of the primary tax limit. As creatures of statute, the district only has powers expressly given to it, and its imposition of a secondary property tax without voter approval was illegal. Specifically, Section 1907A6 is the only source of authority for the district to levy secondary property taxes. If, as appellees argue, Section 1914 allowed a separate route for taxation without voter approval, then it would subsume 1907A6's narrower authorization.
Mr. Thorpe, a point of clarification, did the district levy the tax here, or did the county levy the tax?
The county ultimately levied the tax, but it's immaterial to the analysis because at all times below, the county and the district were crystal clear that the district was requesting the tax and that they believed under Section 1914, the county had no discretion in the matter. Their reading of Section 1914 was simply that the district presents a budget and an estimate of the amount that they need to be raised by taxation. And at that point, in their view, the county shall impose a tax sufficient to cover that amount. And so the county's role, I think both sides would probably agree that we certainly would, that the county's role was ministerial at that point. We'd say it was not authorized by law, but in any event, they exercised no discretion in the matter. The district came up with the idea to tax, requested the tax, and the county simply imposed it. The statutes
just so I'm clear, where in the record could we find that the county considered that it had no discretion in whether to seek this tax or impose it?
I'd be happy to follow up with the specific record citation. I don't have it in front of me, Your Honor, but there was in the letter where the district requested the tax from the county, the district cited the language from 1914.
Okay. So the district may have said, you have to do this, but where is your proof, for lack of a better phrase, that the county agreed with their interpretation and thought that they had to do it and had no choice?
Your Honor, the county's view on the matter, I suppose, was not well developed below. The county's taken no position in this litigation. There are statements from a council meeting regarding the county's role in this process, but I don't believe that was developed below, and it's not in the record. Another key point on the county versus district distinction, as we explained in our brief, as a matter of judicial estoppel, and simply as an equitable matter, the district can't shift horses mid-race and fundamentally change its argument from one that it prevailed on below, namely that the district itself had the power to impose this tax, to a new argument on appeal. It's actually in conflict with the original argument that the county was the one imposing the tax and the county has that power. But in any event, the statutes don't really distinguish between the powers of the district and the powers of the county for this purpose. Section 1907 authorizes the district.
Are the geographic boundaries of the district coterminous with that of the county?
I believe so, yes, Your Honor.
You believe so, or do you know?
They are. They're coterminous, Yuma County. They're not always with hospital districts. In fact, 1914, as we've explained, Section 1914 does have several procedural purposes. One of those is assessing and allocating a tax when the boundaries are not coterminous with the county, and specifically when they cover more than one county. But that's one of several purposes that Section 1914 has, completely distinct from authorizing a separate route to taxation without voter approval. As I indicated earlier, Section 1907A6 provides a narrow authorization to tax for operation and maintenance of a hospital, and it requires voter approval prior to doing so. If Section 1914 were what appellees say it is, a general authorization to impose a tax for any financial needs of the district without voter approval, then it would completely subsume Section 1907A6. And that such a reading would be highly disfavored because it would render 1907A6 a nullity. A district would never need to obtain voter approval for a tax for operation maintenance if it could simply go to the county directly without voter approval and obtain a tax for any purpose. Now, the county insists as a factual matter that none of the tax funds were for the purpose of operating and maintaining the district's hospital facilities.
Why doesn't it make sense that the law would distinguish between taxes imposed by the hospital district and taxes imposed by the county in this way? But there's a concern that a hospital district may not be as politically accountable, and therefore we have to go get voter approval.
Certainly, Your Honor, I think that's...
Let me finish, please.
I'm sorry.
But a board of supervisors is politically accountable, and therefore we trust the voters in that matter to vote out the people who are not following their wishes. Why couldn't the legislature, as it seems like, at least superficially they've done here, kind of distinguish between where we need voter approval and where we don't? And that kind of makes sense to me.
I think it could have, Your Honor, but it didn't. Section 1914, whatever it does, it does not give the County Board of Supervisors discretion in the matter. It provides...
But is that the question, or is where can you point in the statute to where the county's discretion is limited? In other words, that the county's authority to tax is limited.
I think that's the point I'm trying to make, Your Honor, that the county's discretion in Section 1914 is limited. So that the idea that Section 1914 could perform the function of providing meaningful county oversight of the district by giving the County Board of Supervisors some say in whether to impose the tax or not, which I think as a policy matter, that could be a perfectly reasonable approach. The text of 1914 makes clear that that's not what it's doing because it gives the county no discretion in the matter. The County Board of Supervisors shall thereupon levy the tax when it receives the request in writing from the district. So that its function cannot be what I believe you're indicating, Judge Morris, of having the County Board of Supervisors play some meaningful oversight role in whether to impose the tax. I think that leaves us again with Section 1907A6, which provides a general taxing power to the district. And again, it has to go through the county to exercise that power because it has to hold an election. And to hold an election, it has to go to the County Board of Supervisors. And the County Board of Supervisors actually undertakes the mechanics of holding that election and obtaining voter approval for the tax.
Council, question on the timing of the enactment of these different statutes and if it's problematic to your position or not. So 1914 predated 1907 and 17201 by decades. So help me understand, if 1914 existed before those other two statutes, help me understand how we can read 1914 as just procedural, not substantive.
Your Honor, you're correct that the language that's relevant here from Section 1914 dates back to 1949. And prior to the 1980s, that was the only language in the chapter that dealt with this power of taxation. It didn't include any kind of express authorization to impose a tax, but it did reference taxes and procedures for levying taxes. Now, it's certainly arguable as that prior to the 1980s, there was some kind of implied power of taxation under Section 1914 because that was the only statute that mentioned a tax. Clearly, the legislature was contemplating some kind of tax existing. And so that I think courts at that time looked for some kind of some system within the existing statutes to govern those taxes. All of that changed in the early 1980s. In 1980, the Arizona electorate approved and adopted Article 9, Section 19 of the Arizona Constitution, which provided a primary tax levy limitation. That if primary property taxes increased by more than 2%, simplifying it a little bit, that they had to be there was a strict voter approval requirement. Counties didn't have discretion anymore to increase property taxes on their own by that amount. Now, shortly after that, the Arizona legislature, again in 1980, enacted ARS 42301. That's the statute that's now renumbered as 17201, requiring voter approval for any county's secondary property tax. So I think that establishes as a general matter that counties, when they impose secondary property taxes, or property taxes in excess of the primary tax, primary property tax levy, they have to obtain voter approval. So that's the general principle, and it's entirely consistent with the enactment in 1981 of 1907, which detailed powers and duties of a hospital district. It's spoken in a rather comprehensive way, dealing with quite a few different powers and duties, and one of those was the authorization to tax. Now, in context, because it's a powers and duties statute that's comprehensive, it's clear that that is the power of the district to tax. Also, the language there is general. When it provides that the hospital may impose a tax for the operation and maintenance of a hospital, it's referring to any tax that the district imposes for the purposes that it's authorized to undertake by this chapter as a hospital district, namely maintaining a hospital, whether directly or indirectly.
Wouldn't it have been clearer if your reading is correct, wouldn't it have been cleaner if the legislature had put the language in subsection 6 that talks about it going to the electorate, if they had put that up above all of the enumerated powers of the district? Wouldn't that have been cleaner?
It may have. I can't speculate why the legislature didn't do that. I think perhaps one reason is because 1907 deals with a variety of powers, many of which have nothing to do with taxation. The power to sue and be sued, the power to use a corporate seal, the power to buy and sell property. And those powers in general do not require voter approval. The one power where the legislature specified there must be voter approval is in imposing a tax. The district tries to argue that its tax doesn't fall under 1907A6 and therefore doesn't require voter approval because it's not for the operation and maintenance of a hospital. Now, as an initial matter, assuming that that argument is correct, the conclusion is not that the tax is authorized under 1914. The conclusion is that the tax is not authorized at all. Because again, as a matter of logic, 1907 is the only authorization to impose a tax. The text of 1914 simply doesn't bear that weight. And so if the tax is not for the operation and maintenance of a hospital, then the tax is not authorized.
So your position is that the way the court would read 1914 30 years ago is different than the way we should read 1914 once 1907 and 17201 were enacted. Is that, am I hearing you correctly?
Your Honor, I don't think appellants would positively endorse the prior reading of 1914. I still think as a textual matter, there's nothing in 1914 that authorizes the imposition of a tax. I think understandably it was quite unclear prior to 1907A6 what 1914 was doing because there was no authorization and yet it spoke of a tax. And so courts in Roberts and in Atchison and Topeka concluded that there was a taxing power prior to 1981, even though there was no express authorization to tax. That changed in 1981. With the express authorization to tax and with the express limitation on that authorization requiring voter approval. My friends on the other side have tried to argue that the fact that 1914 predates 1907 means that the legislature intended to allow some alternate mode of taxation that didn't require voter approval. But I think they're getting it backwards. When one statute predates another one, there's some kind of conflict between them. Assuming there is a conflict, the later enactment generally prevails over the prior enactment. So looking back, the legislature stepped in 1981, enacted 1907A6, and assuming there is any kind of conflict between those, 1907A6 and its voter approval requirement would control. Now, there's not a conflict, as I've explained, because 1914 simply does not deal with the power to tax.
So to my earlier question about where is the limitation on the board's authority to impose a tax, your answer is then it's not that there's a limitation, it's that there is no authority to tax, to issue this tax.
There's no authority to issue a tax unilaterally without voter approval, if that's what you're asking, Your Honor.
Then tell me where is the board's voter approval requirement for a board to issue a tax. I'm hearing you say there isn't. What there is there's no authority to issue this tax. The only authority to issue this tax is really the hospital district's authority to issue this tax, and that's subject to voter approval.
There's no voter approval in Title 48 for the board to issue a tax, because Title 48 does not contemplate the board on its own authority, or it's on its own initiative, exercising its own discretion, imposing a tax. I think it contemplates the board acting ministerially at the discretion of the district. Now, to the extent that the board's discretion is involved at all, I think 42-17201 fills in the gap there and makes clear that whenever the Board of Supervisors is imposing a secondary property tax, that tax requires voter approval. So even accepting my friend's argument on appeal that the board imposed the tax and the district was simply a recipient of those tax funds, then the Board of Supervisors should have obtained voter approval under 17201. But again, that argument it's a new argument on appeal that's in direct conflict with the argument they prevailed on below. They're stopped from making that argument. And ultimately, the structure of Title 48 makes clear that the board isn't the one exercising any kind of taxing discretion or taxing authority. I want to talk a little bit about, just very quickly, the operation and maintenance issue and the district's argument that the tax is not for operation and maintenance because the purpose is to pay legal bills and other costs related to a lawsuit with the operator of the hospital. The Arizona Supreme Court addressed this issue in a closely analogous context in City of Phoenix v. Orbitz in 2019 when it construed the term operate. The question was whether travel brokers, defined as entities that operate hotels, were operating hotels under that tax law, where they weren't on the ground running the hotel. They were brokers. They were facilitating transactions between hotel customers and actual hotels on the ground as middlemen. And the Arizona Supreme Court said, nevertheless, travel brokers are operating hotels. They construe the ordinary meaning of the term operate because there, as here, operate was undefined in statute. And they said operate means to put or keep in operation, including those who facilitate the transaction. So it doesn't necessarily just mean directly running the day-to-day operations of a hospital. It also includes, as here, contracting with a third party for the operation of a hospital, consistent with the district's entire purpose for existence as a hospital district, which is to facilitate and keep in operation a hospital for the residents of the county. So ultimately, the tax is for the operation and maintenance of a hospital. It falls squarely under Section 1907A6, and it required voter approval. Unless there are any further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, may it please the Court. My name is Paul Girding. I'm here on behalf of the Hospital District Board. I'm here with my associate, Jasmine Chigbro. Of course, I had a presentation for you, but given your questions, I think I'm just going to turn to each of the questions. I think I believe I have an answer for all of them, and I'll cite directly to the statutes and the case law. The first question I heard was, who levied the tax? That issue was squarely addressed in the Prescott newspapers case. And in that case,
Let's
go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt your new presentation, but can you respond first to the argument that you're now taking a different position on appeal as to who levied the tax than you did below.
We don't believe we ever did that, Your Honor. It's a conflation of two separate powers. The power to tax pursuant to 1907, which was enacted in 1985, for purposes of operating a hospital, operating and maintaining a hospital, which Robert said there was no taxing authority to do, and hospital districts could not levy taxes or raise taxes to operate or maintain a hospital. So this court in Prescott noticed that 1407 falls under the district's taxing authority to operate and maintain a hospital and levy a tax itself. This court made that distinction in section 1419, where it said, 1914, where clearly the county levies the tax pursuant to the budget request made by the hospital district in order to sufficiently meet its obligations. So two separate types of taxes, both secondary taxes. One is a county tax pursuant to section 1914. The other is a district tax pursuant to section 1907.
And so your colleague, your friend, as he would refer to
my friend, certainly,
is just making up when he says that's not the position you guys took below.
That's correct. We don't believe that's the position. We believe that it's a conflation of two separate issues when we're saying levy the tax, and it's from the assertion sometimes that there was a tax levied by the hospital district board. One could say that, and that if the court could just take a moment to think about it. If there is a
district, that's why we're here. We're taking moments to think about
it. If there's a district request for a budget to have a certain amount of money levied to meet their operating needs, which they only did for the first time in 2021, then the county then must levy that tax pursuant to section.
So 19. He's correct then, at least as to the secondary point, that your position is that this is not. This is a ministerial function. Once you guys submit that budget request to the county, they have no choice but to levy this tax.
We believe, and there's nothing in the record with regards to the county's position. I was present at that meeting, and I'll say as where the county.
If it's beyond the record, then don't say it.
And I won't say it. There's nothing in the record with regards to the county's ability to negate it. I would argue that they could, because anything that's outside the or ultra vires to the statute is something they can't do. And the Roberts Court made that distinction. The Roberts Court said that the limit on the hospital district board's ability to tax is it must be sufficient to meet the obligations for the board. So the Roberts Court already decided there are limits. The second issue is, I believe you made the distinction, Your Honor, with regards to county board of supervisors being elected. Hospital district board members are also elected officials. They serve there voluntarily, but they're elected on biannual basis for terms. So they are elected officials. They are wholly accountable to their district. To get to another issue, just to clarify the record, my friend, a counsel for the opposition, is incorrect. The district boundaries do not encompass all of Yuma County. It's only a portion of Yuma County.
Okay. So then when the county imposes district, are people outside of the hospital district paying it?
No, they should not be. It's ad valorem. It should be a tax that's only upon the hospital district members. That's the district's understanding.
Okay.
Only property within the district, and it's not a sales tax, which affects everybody. It's a parcel tax, which actually follows the individual property itself within the district.
Counsel, I want to ask you just maybe a little bit higher level bird's eye view question. So within Title 48, 1907, there's a clear statement that the legislature wanted voter approval of secondary taxes imposed by the district under that provision. In 4217201, we also see language indicating that sort of overriding the primary tax requires the county to get voter approval. It seems to me that reading those two things together, and I recognize there are other sort of historical and textual issues here, but just kind of high level looking at those two things, that our legislature was indicating we're not going to go beyond our primary taxing without the voters having an opportunity to have a say.
Well, I understand how the court may be confused in that regard, specifically because
I'm not sure I would say that I was confused, but I would appreciate your help telling me how the legislature's indication that they would like the voters to approve taxes does not apply here.
So the article in which section 17201 falls under is called the secondary property tax levies section, but it really relates to primary taxes. It relates to taxes which are in excess of the primary limits. The legislature did not intend to set limits on secondary taxes, and it made that very clear, and you can see that in some of the supplemental authority that we submitted prior to today's hearing. Primary taxes are defined as all taxes except for secondary taxes. Secondary taxes pursuant to the Act, in particular 42.1101, are bond monies, essentially one area, two under Section B, ad valorem or assessments that are levied for special taxing districts and assessment districts other than school districts and community college districts. That's the 1980 definition of what is a secondary tax. It specifically excluded, as Judge Williams pointed out a moment ago, the need for an election. So a special taxing district has the authority to have its own secondary tax issued without an election. The third part of that is, part three, of secondary taxes are amounts that are levied pursuant to an election to exceed a budget or a limit. So the secondary property tax section that you're concerned about deals with secondary taxes which are necessary to exceed the primary limits, but it did not intend, we believe, to affect all secondary taxes in the state of Arizona. And that makes sense, because many, as we pointed out in our brief, many districts need to levy taxes on their own through the county in order to operate. I had the opportunity to participate in the hospital district board meeting last night. They prepared their budget, which has to be submitted by July 15th pursuant to Section 1914. They look at their expenses, their costs, the rents for their offices, their legal fees, their election costs. Those are passed on and usually paid through, historically, rent paid by the hospital. In this case, when the hospital stopped paying the rent, which would cover the expenditures of the hospital district, the district was faced with no choice but to go to the county and request funding to meet its obligations pursuant to Section 1914. The hospital district didn't want to do it. The hospital district said that they would get the money refunded. That's an issue that's outside of the record, but that was something that they were compelled to do. Once it was completed, once the litigation was completed, there was no further need for levies. There has not been a levy last year, and there won't be another levy this year. So again, secondary property taxes pursuant to 1914 and the definitions of Section 1914 enacted by the legislature demonstrate that no election is necessary for those taxes. And I believe, Judge Morris, that the limits were alluded to or stated within the Roberts case, where it said the statute itself limits it. Not only Section 1914, as stated in Roberts, but also Section 1907. 1907 gives the district limited powers. So if the district were to, say, want to buy a private jet for the district's use, that would certainly be outside of the authority of Section 1914 and Section 1907. They only have the right to be sued, to buy or rent property for purposes of the district for the benefit of the district. So the concern that the district's somehow going to go off kilter and be out of control with this authority to just submit a budget and for its operating expenses and have them approved by the county is really not a concern, because they do have to answer to the voters. They are subject to election authority. And anything that they do outside of Section 1914 or 1907 or their bonding authority would be ultra vires and certainly meet with an action from my friends to the left. Is there an additional question?
Does it strike you as odd, if we read 1907 the way that you suggest we read it, does it strike you as odd that a district can only assess or only levy a tax for ambulance service, urgent care, operation and maintenance, the list of them, of these responsibilities under A6, but then also says districts also have these other obligations, but there's no funding mechanism for those. Does that strike you as odd that the legislature would say you can only levy a tax on these few of your powers and responsibilities?
Well, going back to your comments earlier, Judge Williams, I appreciate that. Wouldn't the legislature have said you need that same authority for each of those issues? And the history tells us that there was always the ability to levy a tax, just not pursuant to Roberts, to operate or maintain a hospital. So to sue or be sued, and for other purposes, and even in Roberts, they noted that hospital districts have taxed. The only authority that they had was pursuant to Section 1914. When the legislature came down with the Tax Reform Act in 1980, they were essentially trying to protect taxpayers with regards to primary taxation, not secondary taxation. And they made that clear with regards to limits. The limit, the very first sentence of the act that you're concerned about, Judge Perkins, states that this is for primary taxes. And secondary taxes, which are raised for the purpose of exceeding the limits on the original primary tax. I don't think it's odd, Your Honor, Judge Williams, with regards to Section 1907. Those powers were there from the beginning of the Act. They always had the ability to sue or be sued, own or buy property. They typically did that pursuant to some of the case law that you've seen by purchasing outside through outside sources or bond money a hospital and leasing it to an operation who could then manage the facilities. But the hospital district itself, if it were going to try to operate and maintain a hospital, which is the roadblocks it ran into relative to Roberts, it's going to have to, we needed money to be able to do that, and eventually the legislature granted hospital districts the authority to do so pursuant to Section 1907, paren 6, on paren. Why did they do that? Because running a hospital is a very expensive endeavor, and one that certainly the taxpayers, the district would agree, should be involved in. For running the day-to-day operations of the hospital district, no. That falls under Section 1914. Unfortunately, within the powers of being sued, the district had to defend itself, could not afford it, and eventually had to levy a tax. And that's why we're here today. Was there an additional question?
Could you talk to me about that sue or be sued and the litigation issue in the context of the case that your friend identified, the Orbitz case, which did seem to kind of expand the concept of operate beyond what maybe we would think of as purely operating a hotel in that context.
Certainly.
So the litigation and sue or be sued, how is that not sort of part of maintaining and operating the hospital?
Well, the hospital district was sued as a lessor, and it was sued with regards to the lease obligations. It had nothing to do with the operation of the hospital. So the hospital district was not sued relative to maintaining or operating the hospital. Without going through the list of everything that we listed in our brief, Orbitz is very distinguishable in that you have a broker that is has a monetary interest in a for-profit business to help run those hotels, gain rent from those tenants at those hotels, get commissions. They are involved in advertising. At the hospital level, the hospital district doesn't advertise for the hospital. They're completely separate entities. The hospital district is solely a lessor in this case. It has an agreement with regards to the hospital that the hospital shall lease the premises and run the hospital for the benefit of the community. But the hospital district can't hire and fire physicians, can't hire and fire nurses, has absolutely no say in which patients can come and go, has no say with regards to rates that are charged. As a elected body that wants to make sure that the hospital is acting in the benefit of the interests of the community, they certainly will raise those issues with the operating board of the YRMC, the hospital. But the district itself has absolutely no authority to manage or operate or maintain the hospital. That was a central issue in the litigation that
we're solely listening. What authority did Orbitz have, though, to? They didn't set the rates that they were charging for overnight stays in the hotels. They didn't hire and fire hotel staff or employees. I don't see that distinction makes any difference.
I believe that they were involved in, if I recall from the case law, the actual advertising for the hotels, running guests to the hotels, and then taking profit from that. Here we're dealing with an elected body that only looks to see that the hospital is acting for the benefit of the community. It gets nothing in return. It gets no money other than the rent, which was just to help the district.
So the commission that Orbitz got is different than the rent the hospital gets
Absolutely.
Meaningful way?
The hospital has the hospital district has the authority to rent and lease and purchase property under Section 1907. That went on since the very beginning of the enactment of the Special Taxing District Act. And again, just for the record, this was a hospital special taxing district that was created in the 40s. So well before 1907-6, it was clear the legislator intended that the district would have taxing authority. I believe that the lease payments for having the ability to have a hospital operate within the district itself is completely separate than the commissions that are gained from the profitability of the hospital itself, as you would have in Orbitz. There's no commission, again, there's nothing that, if the hospital itself makes this year's projected make almost $1 billion, that will not affect the hospital district in any way, other than they'll be concerned, are the patients at the hospital being taken care of? Does that help, Your Honor?
Not sure.
Okay. Any other questions that I can address? Well, respectfully then, if I may, I'll save a minute for any questions that are remaining after rebuttal. But I will finish in the next 2 minutes just saying, again, I understand that
we generally don't have service.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, you said that we may reserve rebuttal. So
yeah, I was speaking to the appellant.
Then I'll continue. I thought that was a little different. So certainly we believe that the hospital district never operated or maintained the hospital. That carve out came because, again, given the statutory and case law history, hospital districts wanted to do that, could not do it because of parks. And then the law was changed, giving them the opportunity to do that. But if you're going to spend that kind of money, hospital district, the legislature said, pursuant to 14076, you're going to have an election. Similarly, with special taxing districts, you'll see the same amounts for bringing on great obligations for bond approvals, for example. Is there any questions with regards to that? Finally, Your Honors, with regards to the estoppel issue, we believe we've already taken the same position. Yes, the hospital can levy taxes, but that's under Section 1907, which was not the case here. Here, the county levies the tax at the request of the hospital district pursuant to Section 1914. Other than that, I have nothing further, Your Honor.
Thank you.
First, just a quick note regarding the boundaries of the district being coterminous with the county. I apologize if I'm mistaken on that matter. I recall early on in this case looking at that issue and was confident that the boundaries are coterminous. If not, I apologize. In any event, that issue is not material here to the taxing question. Turning to another issue that my friend raised regarding whether the district has argued that the district or the county has the taxing power. On this issue, I'm quite confident that we're right. Looking at pages 5 to 6 of the reply, you don't have to trust me on this. These are the district's representations below and their substantive arguments. The district argued that it has the power to impose the tax under Section 1914. The district said that it possessed the authority to levy the tax under Section 1914, which requires the county to levy a property tax on behalf of the district. It also said this conclusion is especially apt considering, this is a quote from the district, Section 48, 1914's legislative history, cases interpreting the district's taxing authority and special taxing district law generally. Instead of the preceding below, most importantly to today's discussion, 1914 explicitly authorizes the hospital district to levy a tax without the affirmative vote of the electorate to cover the district's budgeted expenses. So we're talking about the district's power, not the county's power. Now, the county could have imposed its own tax, perhaps, for the district. It could have maybe given the district some funds from its general funds to cover the expenses. It might have had a variety of other ways to cover these expenses, but that's not what the county did. The county imposed a tax at the district's request, citing Section 1914, which by its plain language, gives the county no discretion in the matter. It says the county shall thereupon levy a tax. So we're talking about the district, not the county. And even if we were talking about the county, there would be separate requirements for voter approval under Title 42. The district also argues that it's solely a lessor. But the district's not a generic property manager for the county. It's a hospital district. Its purpose for existence is to provide for the operation of a hospital for county residents. And regardless of whether it entered a lease or did so itself, that's what it did here. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments. We'll consider the matter submitted and issue our decision in due course. Court is adjourned.